This is the Ken and Curtis program right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. No Ken, no Curtis this weekend. Instead, it's Shime and Fitzy filling in. It feels so good to be reunited with my man Fitzy. Haven't been together since July 4th. Or July 5th, technically. I'm glad to be back with you today, Fitzy.
Oh, buddy. I'm so glad. This is just, if I'm going to do Saturday morning sports radio, I want it to be with somebody who I can just vibe, flow, and chat freely with, like yourself, who doesn't mind that even though we were trying to set up a tease to talk Patriots, if I'm going to cross sports momentarily, it's going to be for a good reason. During the break, I rewatched the highlight of, as Jacob, as or as I like to call Javon, mentioned in trending in the 9 o'clock hour, the highlight of Friday night was Shohei Ohtani
hitting a
walk-off grand slam.
So awesome,
dude! I'm gonna say straight up right now, $70 million a season for Shohei Ohtani for 10 years, coming off of the UCL bracing surgery, sort of like a Tommy John light, if you will, which of course has prevented him from pitching this year. The dude is worth more, and that's just as a left-handed DH. Honest to God, what an absolute stud.
That home run last, that grand slam, walk-off grand slam, was pure electricity. Yes. Shohei Ohtani is the first Dodgers player in history to have 40 dingers and 40 stolen bases, and is technically on pace for 50 dingers and 50 stolen bases this year.
Yes, and the guy just had surgery. He had surgery in the offseason.
Oh, by the way, he's also an awesome pitcher. Next year.
Yeah, so they have the best hitter, not best left. I'm not going to qualify it
best
left-handed hitter. They have the best hitter in baseball now, maybe in baseball in half a century, on their team, who looks like at no point anytime soon will the man be slowing down at the plate. Oh, and next year, now, of course, he may step back a little bit because he isn't just going to focus on all offense next year, because he's also going to get added to the rotation. That said, the Dodgers are going to add a guy that's probably going to give them 17 wins, a 3-1 ERA, and 200 strikeouts next season. You have to be S-ing me. It's blanking me.
It is wild.
God, is he awesome.
He is so bleeping awesome. He is the most electrifying baseball player we've had in quite some time. I don't remember being this excited about a player or like a at bats since like the days of the roided up like Maguire, Sosa, and then like Ken Griffey, because Ken Griffey was awesome. Like that was when the last time I was like, oh, I gotta go watch this guy hit.
Yeah, no, I remember in the mid 90s, I still say, you know, people debate, what was the longest home run ever hit at Fenway Park? Was it that one that Manny Ramirez once hit that they said went way past the?
I don't know. That one Aaron Judge hit earlier this year to dead center field was
might have been 600 feet. They don't want to say that Aaron Judge has the longest home run in the history of Fenway, but he probably does.
Might.
That said, I remember being in a game in 1995, and I keep tabs on both the great experiences I've had at Boston sports events as well as games that had nothing to do with Boston sports, where I got the feels. And this one happens to be a Boston sports game I loved being at that was not a win for the Red Sox. They lost the game 9-8. It was mid-90s. They were down 9-3 to the Toronto Blue Jays. Mo Vaughn got up, hit a grand slam, and it was 9-7. Fenway went insane, right? The next batter up was roided up Canseco, back when he was the DH for the Sox.
Yes.
And the first pitch that he sees, He hit it so hard that's back when they had the Coke bottles over the monster into the netting, well before they actually built the monster seats. Shime, he hit it. It was still rising when it hit the top of the Coke bottle and bounced back into the stadium. I kid you not, if the Coke bottle didn't get in the way, it would have cleared the Mass Pike and probably landed in Brighton. I have never seen a baseball hit so hard in my life. And I still remember to this day having like a little scorgasm in the stands, just like, oh my God, you can't be serious. They lost the game, but like that moment stands out to me. I love great at-bats like that. Like Ohtani went down. He hit a 7-iron last night at Chavez Ravine. You know, 400 feet.
That was the first pitch of the at bat, too, wasn't it? It was like, all right, here's the first pitch, and it just gets absolutely plastered into the right center field.
Oh my God, it's so great. Makes you wish. And for all the people out there, like, how can you possibly handle doing 3 hours with this fanboy on fanboy radio?
Somebody
here
literally tweeted that at me.
I know. Oh, he's the best. It's like I don't have a day without that guy angry tweeting at me and misspelling every angry tweet that he puts out there. But I'll tell you straight up, the Red Sox not going above and beyond. Like, I'll forgive the Patriots for not offering $30 million to Calvin Ridley or $35 million to Pussface Ayuk. However, not basically saying, hey, remember the Lionel Messi deal? Like, we'll give you $10 from every City Connect jersey. We'll give you 2 parking lots. You can collect all the money out there. We'll give you a Capital Grill, $80 million a season. What do you want, Shohei? Just literally write the check and we'll give it to you, because that's how important I think this guy is to a franchise and the game of baseball.
Like, he's the first player that could have ownership in the franchise. Like, he deserves it.
I should. Hart and I back, you know, during the long, slow off season when we started talking about who the Patriots pick would be in the top 5 way back after Mac Jones backfooted one into the end zone, into the arms of a freaking Colts player in Frankfurt, for God's sake.
That
was
so bad. Interception. It was the best worst pass
I've ever seen in my life.
It was the worst interception I have ever seen in my entire life.
It was one
of them,
for sure.
And I saw Nathan Peterman throw 5 in the first half of a football game, and that was worse.
Oh, God, it was so bad. But I remember saying to Hart at the time, like, sort of like workshopping this crazy idea. Why couldn't, and I know they do things differently in soccer or football, but why couldn't Major League Baseball, like, why can't we have things like where you give them, you sort of like break free from the collective bargaining agreements and try to find new and clever ways to orchestrate contracts? Like, I always thought, instead of, and maybe there were some underhanded dealings and there was some back channeling during the Brady days, but are you going to tell me with how much Tom Brady was ultimately worth to the town of Foxborough, the New England Patriots franchise, Patriot Place, Boston, and New England at large, that coming up with a Messi-style deal for Brady wouldn't have been honestly what the man earned?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think you're totally right. I think finding creative ways to give incentives and contracts is totally cool. I don't know that I would give ownership to, like, Caleb Williams. To Shohei Ohtani, I might.
No.
Like, I might
no,
give
2%. Earn it. Mahomes deserves it. Caleb Williams hasn't earned it yet.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if Mahomes is, like, in his final contract with the Kansas City Chiefs, like, he knows, like, I got 5 more years left of me. This is going to be my final contract. If in that contract it says, you know, at the expiration of your contract, you get 2% of the franchise, I'm like, cool. Like, that's fine. I think that's totally fine. Why not?
Yeah. It's funny you say that, because I think, you know, certain analysts, you know, grandpas, fans, whatever, hate the fact that now everybody has a logo. Everyone focuses so much on their brand.
Who cares?
Yeah,
it's kind of part of that. It's kind of the evolution of life. Like, with social media and everything, you can make a ton of money and do a ton of cool things through social media and being an influencer. So, like, if you gotta, you know, make your own logo and make your mark yourself, I don't think that's a bad thing. That's a skill. It's not like it's not just something you can do.
No, and I think part of the reason why is because you've got these contracts where you have to try to get all that money up front. You want to get all your guarantees. And as the commitment from the team to you is fleeting as you age out and they try to bring in the new, fresh body, why wouldn't you want to do everything you can? Why wouldn't you want to? I don't think you should have a ready-made logo and be all about your own brand before you've taken one freaking professional snap.
No, but you want to market yourself, because there's certain situations. There's certain situations, too, where guys just don't necessarily pan out in the NFL, but there's other opportunities that can await for them because they're good at marketing themselves and they're relatively smart. You look at guys like Dan Orlovsky or Chase Daniel or all these other guys who were like backup quarterbacks and never really made like starter money. I mean, Chase Daniel made a ridiculous amount of money for being a backup that long, but
he sure did.
But like, he marketed himself, he puts himself on Twitter, he's ready, and boom, all of a sudden he's, you know, on podcasts and TV shows and Dan Orlovsky's on ESPN. Like, that's, I don't think that's a bad thing. You prepare yourself for life after football.
Correct. You and, like, for a guy, let's say Patrick Mahomes, like, he's probably the closest thing that there is right now to somebody who deserves an Ohtani-level contract.
Correct.
Because the guy is clearly the best player in Major League, in the NFL, and it's not even close right now. The most impactful player as well.
Yeah, not even close.
Having a logo, having a brand, starting a series of sports bars with your bestie, Travis Kelce, who also has seen his profile blow up thanks to a certain GF that he's been making
Taylor Swift
last year. You know, good for him. Like, you, this is all, it's not about, it is about working harder. That's what Tom Brady has always preached. But it's also about working smarter. And for Patrick Mahomes to see that right now is his earning window and to make the most of it without oversaturating, that's the whole thing, too. You got to be careful not to oversaturate your market, but you want to make sure that you can take advantage of it in the best way possible. So maybe 2 years from now, if C.J. Stroud will say, I'll pull him from, since he's an example or a North Star that I like to point to frequently with the future stars of the NFL. If he takes the Texans to an AFC championship or, you know, maybe even a Super Bowl over the during his rookie contract, then he should have a brand. Then he should have a thing. He should become a movement in Texas and down in Houston. And that's his earning window right now. But
yeah.
Caleb Williams should pump the brakes until he proves what he is on asking for a piece of the Bears or trying to showcase whatever his fancy logo or brand is just yet.
Yeah, see, I'm fine with Caleb Williams branding himself. Like, I don't think that's fine, too. Like, I don't think you have to earn anything to brand yourself. I mean, Mac Jones did it, and people loved it here at the time. I think that, especially when you're Caleb Williams, you are the number one pick in the draft, and you're freaking awesome. Like, he is just... You just watch him throw a football.
I don't like the fact that he paints his nails.
Oh, those people suck.
Oh, he carries a pink iPhone. Not on my team, bro.
The man carries a purse. What's he doing? Like, who cares? This guy is awesome. You know what? Every Sunday, if he's on primetime football, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to plant my ass on the couch. I'm going to turn on the game, and I'm going to watch him play because he's so much fun. He is if Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers had like a little bit of like a little baby and he just became a rookie in the NFL, that's Caleb Williams. He is just going to run around. He's going to do the yakety sax music. He's going to be playing in your mind as he's running around, almost doing like a little Kyler Murray shuffle. But then when you least expect it, he's going to make some tight wire three quarters arm slot throw that's going to be an absolute dart to Rome Odunze, and you'll be like, holy smokes, what did I just watch?
Yeah, I know later on the program, probably the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to get into our hottest takes. I'll tease one out. Chicago Bears fans, you're going to be watching football that matters well into January.
Yeah, good for Chicago Bears fans. That's nice. Mm-hmm. There's a chance. They have never had a quarterback throw for 4,000 yards or 30 touchdowns in a single season. Caleb Williams could do both of those this year.
Bet it now. And I'm very much looking forward to attending that particular game live. I'll be going out to Chicago.
Patriots Spares.
Mm-hmm. My son's best friend is from Chicago. He get along very well with that dad, so we're going to be doing a fathers and sons Pats at Bears trip.
Ooh, at Soldier Field?
Yes, sir.
Hell yeah. Congratulations. That's going to be awesome.
Can not wait, just like I can't wait for the next segment.
617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in here. Fitzy and Shime filling in for Ken and Curtis. We're going to continue with the past discussion. We're going to get into the five things we're watching in the final preseason game for your New England Patriots. But right now, Jacob is going to get you caught up with what's trending. This is Ken and Curtis, but no Ken, no Curtis. It's Shime and Fitzy here with you on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Doing a little talk, a little Pats, a little Red Sox, a little everything, but the Red Sox talk. The Red Sox on WEEI is brought to you by your New England Ford dealers. Make it the best summer ever with Ford by joining the Bronco family or getting the made-for-you New England Edition F-150, official truck of the Red Sox. Fitzy, I got to tell you, too, the Broncos, those things are gas. I love those.
No, they are, except I wouldn't be able to decide like which version I would want most because I see like the little smaller ones like sometimes in that little cobalt blue and it looks beautiful.
Yes.
But then you see the larger one and it's all white, the sport super deluxe equipped one.
Yeah, like, I think Greg was using like one of the big ass ones that you could pop the top down in Nantucket. That thing looked awesome.
Yeah, they are like few cars have ever had a comeback, and we all know the stigma attached to that particular brand from about 30 years ago or so.
What happened with that? No, I'm just kidding.
Cutting in live on the freaking Rockets Knicks NBA Finals. What a time to be alive.
Imagine you were like a huge Rockets fan, couldn't watch the game, so you recorded it on VCR, because back then that's what you did, and then you got that.
And it was difficult enough to do that. I was actually dipping into the boomer, holy smokes, Fitzy, you really are 50 years old. Well, I had been working down the Cape. It was after my sophomore year at college, and it was me, my dad, and my brother. And A lot of my dad's work used to be on Cape Cod, hence why I became such a Cape Cod devotee and loyalist over time.
Mm-hmm.
And we had been working for the day, and then we stayed at this hotel. We went out for dinner, and we were just chilling in the hotel room watching the finals. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, it just sort of like cuts away. And there's the great OJ chase. And it's just sort of like one of those moments where you thought, like, did someone change the is this real? Like, is you can't help but wonder, like, am I now currently in a sim? Is there an alien takeover that I'm a part of? Or is this actually happening? Still one of the most surreal moments I ever remember experiencing.
Not to totally derail this, but you bring up the Cape. I have to tell you, as a kid who grew up on the South Shore, for a long time, I was very anti-Cape Cod because it created nothing but chaos for my life with the amount of traffic that it created on Route 3. However, I got to tell you, I think I'm a Cape guy now.
Welcome.
I was just there a few days ago, actually. I was down in Falmouth for a couple days. Mm-hmm. Needed to reset the batteries a little bit. Me and the girlfriend went down. I love it down there. It's like the weather is always pristine. It's always nice. The sun shines a little different. It's just, I don't know, man. I think I'm now a Cape guy. I really like the Cape.
I have been to so many seaside communities throughout the beautiful 5.5 states of New England and around our country as well. I'm definitely a coastline and a seashore guy for sure.
Same.
More as much as I've even developed an affinity for lake life, because that's good living over the last decade or so. But the Cape just hits different. The Silly Sandbar is just my most favorite place. It's where I'm going to want ashes spread. It's where I'm so glad that I have grown a love for of coastal communities and Cape life for my boys as well. It's why it was so important to get a place down there and fulfill a dream that my parents had for the longest time. And look, I also understand, having spent a good amount of time down there this year, Shime, the Cape is different even than it was a couple of years ago, when mid and then post-pandemic, people bought up all the real estate, prices soared through the roof, and then inflation hit, but then also sort of like the inflation-fueled gouging took place, and everyone jacked up the prices of their chowder, their beers, their clams. I'll tell you, this was the least populous the Cape has felt in about 5 years.
Really?
It did not feel as packed out as it's been. No, like at no point. Yeah, there were still some waits. Some of my favorite spots down the Cape in Harwichport, my local, the Cleeton Anchor. Well, it was busy, but like never jammed out like the other one, Perk's Coffee Shop and Beer Alley down in Harwichport, which is just a sublime take. Yeah, that was usually busy, but that's because it's an A-plus joint. And I know a lot of other coastline bars were as well, but it never felt, put it this way, it felt like a Fenway that had 28,000 people at it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because like for me, I love like the mom and pop coffee shops. It's one of my favorite things. I love coffee. I could drink coffee all day. And
same. And
I feel like the Cape has a bunch of them. Like I do a quick Google search when I was there. I'm like, oh, I could go to like 7 different ones today. I don't even know if I can get to all of them.
Okay.
So it's like, it's awesome. And you know, on top of that, you know, you just stop at Treehouse on the way down. It's right at the beginning of the Cape. Easy place to stop. And then you make your way on to wherever you're going. And it's just, I don't know, man. I love it down there. I enjoy it. I love the vibe. I love the ocean. So kudos to you for being there for so long, being kind of in, you know, on the ground floor, if you will. I am just figuring it out now. Again, like as a South Shore kid, you just hate the Cape. You just like kind of grow up hating the Cape because like, I'll just go to Nantasket or Marshfield. Why would I go all the way to the Cape and fight that traffic? And now, as an older person, I'm like, I can dodge the traffic and still enjoy the Cape.
That's why you understand that as you grow older, the entire ideal of winter birding between Cape Cod and Florida is just an absolute, absolute dream.
And that's
speaking
dynamite.
Your love of, it is my dream, and I cannot wait to realize it sooner than later even, but get them kids through school, baby, and then you're just going to see nothing but taillights from Uncle Fitz. Right where I live, and back to sports in a second, I promise, but right where my jam is in Dennisport, just around the corner, I've got this string of places, I swear, there's no need for me to even go out beyond the parameters of my neighborhood on the Cape, because we've got a place that I think that our pal Emerson Lotzia over at DraftKings probably just wishes that he could wake up next to and live at. It's the Doghouse, best hot dog you'll ever have.
Ooh.
The glizzies are off the charts over there. And then they recently bought up a deli in Market, so now they have It's the Doghouse's one-stop market. Their fresh baked goods, their coffee is off the charts, and it's the best cinnamon roll on planet Earth. Mm, right down
I
the
love
street,
cinnamon rolls.
The number one Italian deli in New England, as voted a few years ago, our friends over at Banderas Market, then my place, Cleat and Anchor, that has the best craft beer menu in all of New England. It's just... I don't need anything else. I don't, and all the radio stations come in because you're right by the sound, so you can get AM and FM. I get 93.7, 103.7, and 96.3, all crystal clear. Get three different variations of the same.
Well, Fitzy, it's funny.
It's paradise.
It's funny you mentioned that, because even if it's stormy out, even if you're getting knocked around by, you know, Hurricane Ernest or whatever hurricane decides to roll through with its remnants, you can just turn into the Odyssey app and catch Fitzy and Shime filling in for Ken and Curtis from 9 to noon right here on WEI. Look at that.
How about that? now, during the break as well, I sent you a couple things about the Red Sox just to make sure Sox fans still feel like their voice is heard or yes. Their voice of discontent is heard as we amble closer and closer by the hour to the Patriots preseason finale. Our friends over at Boston Sports Info, holy smokes. I mean, they're keeping tabs on everything going on with the demise of the Sox these days. I got to tell you, this whole thing. So first of all, the Red Sox on Friday nights at Fenway are 2-9 this season. That's awful. Did you know also that when Rafaela or David Hamilton hits a home run, they're 20-0? So there's your secret sauce. This blew my mind. Cutter Crawford and Nick Pivetta have allowed more home runs than the entire Diamondbacks pitching staff since the All-Star break.
The Wait, two of them can't be right.
59 and a third innings pitched since the All-Star break. Those two alone have allowed 24 Long Johnsons. The Diamondbacks staff, 289 and a third innings pitched, only 21 Long Johnsons total.
What are we doing? How is that possible?
The pitching staff has, the starting rotation has completely fallen apart. When the Red Sox likely miss the playoffs at this point, then it's going to be because the staff just, the pond got overfished. They tried to get a right-handed starter at the beginning of the season. They picked the wrong former Chicago White Sox
yes,
and Lucas Giolito, and they dealt away Chris Sale in a year where he's going to win
the Cy Young. He's going to win like 15 games and win the Cy Young. It's so Red Sox, it hurts. But you can tune into the Red Sox pregame show hosted by John Lyons, I believe it is today, at 3:10. First pitch is 4:10 right here on the Charleston Star Market, WEI Red Sox Radio Network. Fitzy, you had a question, Patriots related, that we were got a little sidetracked, weren't able to get to. So I want
we
you to
time.
Please feel free, re-rack your question, let us know. What is it that you want to ask me and the people?
Okay. So I went into the season. Now, I think a lot of us, once we saw that they signed Jacoby Brissett and drafted Drake May, we all began setting our expectations of when we thought Drake May would start. There were those who said, sit him the whole season. This team is too much of a mess. You could end up David Carring your asset, damaging him. And then you basically have just, you know, potentially Mac Jones, your latest attempt at finding a franchise quarterback in Foxborough. There were some who said maybe about halfway through the season or so, and some who were banging the drum like, I'm already bored. Start him now. I can't stand this no longer. So I set my expectations right around just before the halfway point of the season. I had set the over-under on games played until Drake May took over as quarterback of the Patriots at 6.5.
Ooh, so not until like week 7. Oh, wow. Okay.
So would they start him potentially... You know, I thought about setting it at 8.5 because it seemed like maybe week 9 at home could be a comfy landing spot for him. Would they potentially start him on the road in London,
Jacksonville?
Of all
places? Ooh. Yeah, or in London. Yeah, that's right.
That could be kind of wild. Like, imagine that. Imagine being able to say, I was at Wembley, which is an insanely great take, by the way. I was at Wembley and I saw Drake May's first game. That could be wild. I think now, the way that the preseason has played out, the way Brissett has looked, which has been competent, adjacent at times, but still a bit shakier than I think some of us have thought. And the way Drake May, he's not at Caleb Williams' level yet. He's not even at Bo Nix's level yet, we'll say, because, you know, those guys may even be a little, they're older. They're more seasoned. They've started for longer times, and they have a better infrastructure around him. But I'd say the way that he has shown an ability to grasp the offense, the way his physical prowess has played out on the field as well, just flicking a ball 55 yards with such effortless accuracy and ease, that ball. Oh, Javon Baker probably still not sleeping at night. I know. I've recalibrated. My new over-under is 4.5.
4.5. So you're saying somewhere between San Francisco and Miami, right around then.
That's why basically what I'm saying is I think that that Miami game, I think I'm with the Andrew Sicilianos, he formerly of the NFL Network, who recently did a Lou Maloney walk and talk saying, look at the games. Look at this opening
walk and talk drama out there. Go ahead.
He said, you know, look at the opening games. You're going to start him on the road against Cincinnati, that kind of high powered offense. Maybe not necessarily the best defense, but probably not. Are you going to start in week two against a Mike McDonald defense against the Seahawks? Maybe, but again, probably not. Could be early. Week three, short week, turnaround, you know, in Death Life Stadium against the ravenous Jetropolitan defense and Robert Saul and all them. Probably not the softest landing spot to start a rookie quarterback. And then week four, you're going on the road against a team that has a stacked roster and Super Bowl aspirations once again in the 49ers. Probably not, but maybe. Maybe, just maybe, week five against the Dolphins. Now, granted, they have a turbo-powered offense. Their defense, you know, they lost one of their pivotal players in Christian Wilkins this offseason. Their cornerbacks have taken a step back. I know they still have Jalen Ramsey, but maybe, just maybe, that may be the perfect spot. Jacoby Brissett, show him the way. Take the slings and arrows for the first month. We'll thank you for your service. You'll earn your $8 million, and then you turn the keys over to the kid.
Yeah, so it's tough for me. When they drafted him, I thought he should start opening day. I still believe he should start opening day. But from the vibe I'm getting from the New England Patriots, I don't know that he will. But to me, it just makes sense. I don't see Cincinnati as this daunting task to start a season. They were like the 28th ranked defense last year. They're not going to be much better. Sam Hubbard's banged up. Miles Murphy, the young defensive tackle, is banged up. Like, yeah, it's Trey Hendrickson, but that's about it. I don't even think they have B.J. Hill anymore. I think he's gone. Oh, no, they have B.J. Hill. They lost D.J. Reader. That's who it was. D.J. Reader, who was their best interior defensive lineman, is now gone.
Good point, but they did sign. Now, they did address the glaring issue on their defense last year, and they were a fun 9-8 team last year because his name's escaping me right now. Jake Browning. I thought he was a plus level backup last year. Now,
sure.
Granted, when you're throwing to Jamar Chase and, you know, T. Higgins, anybody can look
that
like
helps.
A plus level. It does, but I thought they were a fun watch last season. But the biggest issue Cincinnati faced last year, they lost both starting safeties last year in free agency.
Yeah, Jesse Bates was the big loss. They brought in Geno Stone this year, which is a big deal for them. Mm-hmm. And I think Jordan Battle's the second-year player now at Alabama trying to take a step forward. Yep. But, like, for me, I don't see...
And they brought in Von Bell, too.
Yeah, and I just don't see this Cincinnati defense as some daunting task. So for me, like, this is the easiest landing spot. Start him right away because it's opening week. Like, everybody's rusty. I don't expect Cincinnati to come out and be like on have like a Mario Kart mushroom and just be blowing you away. I think Joe Burrow doesn't even throw footballs 3 days in a row right now. Jamar Chase has been holding out. T. Higgins has been a question mark just because of his contract. He's playing, but, like, who knows? And so, for me, and I'm not scared of their rushing attack. Zach Moss is the last thing that scares me. Chase Brown is fine, like, whatever. So, I think defensively, the Patriots can handle this team, which allows the offense to be pretty good. And so, I just think the versatility that Drake May brings to the offense, he is clearly the best way to win football games. I think Jacoby Brissett is a nothing addition to the offense. He doesn't do anything positive. Like, he's just a statue. Whereas Drake May kind of spreads things out. He can move. He can, like, the QB option in the red zone is such a real thing. And so for me, week one is easy. Week two is also easy. I would give you that. But it just seems weird that you would only start Brissett for a week and then May starts in week two.
That makes no sense.
Exactly. I think that is an easier landing spot even than Cincinnati. New head coach on a team that still needs to prove some things coming across the country is probably the easiest landing spot. But again, you're right. It makes no sense. And then you have a gauntlet of games that I don't think it makes sense to start him until week 9 at that point when you go to Tennessee.
Mm-hmm. No, that's why I thought maybe that would have been the starting game. That would have been a perfect start for him as well. Now, granted, Tennessee is one of those teams, by the way, I can't get a feel for this season. I think a lot of people have just said,
Tennessee stinks.
Now, see, that's interesting that you say that because they went and traded for the defensive player that I most coveted during the offseason that I really wish the Patriots had gone and gotten. I think L'Jarius Sneed is dynamite. I mean, he's just
I don't
good
disagree.
Coverage, awesome tackler. That was a plus addition for them, and they got receivers. It really all just comes down to, is Will Levis a professional quarterback, or is he a stumbling bum?
Well, so, yeah, we as the Six Rings podcast didn't believe in Will Levis. That's why we didn't have him in our first round mock that year, and we were all right. Nobody else was right, but we were. I don't believe in Will Levis. I don't think he's all that good. Like, he's fun a little bit because he's kind of a bit of a psycho, but, like, I don't think he's a good quarterback. And honestly, I don't believe in the Tennessee coaching staff at all. I think Bill Callahan Bill Callahan's his dad. Brian Callahan is a nothing. Fitzy, can you name the Tennessee offensive coordinator?
No, actually, I was just sort of assuming that Brian Callahan was going to be calling his own plays.
The offensive coordinator's name is Tim Holtz. I believe there's no relation, shockingly enough. And you know me, I'm a nerd when it comes to this stuff. I've literally never heard of this guy. And yeah. So, like, I look at this team and I think the Tennessee Titans suck. So for me, it's like Drake May starts week one or he doesn't start till week nine.
Okay. Drake May starts week one or Drake May starts. So me middling it for the sake of just giving Brissett.
It's a good
chance to help the team to stabilize and, you know, fortify your offensive line. And as we steer into our five things that we're going to be watching tomorrow night as well, the offensive line being maybe even over how much time Brissett versus May gets tomorrow night and how the receivers look, et cetera. I got to tell you, my favorite little nugget, my favorite takeaway, the development of the week to me was that the Patriots seem to finally be, I'm not going to say listening to the rest of us, but they seem to be zeroing in on their best possible offensive line.
Yes, I couldn't agree more.
This could be, again, this may be the best thing that has happened this week or maybe all preseason long for the Patriots is them zeroing in on what could and should be their best possible offensive line.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that would have Mike Onwenu at tackle, at right tackle, Chucks Okorafor at left tackle. Your guards would be Laden Robinson, City So, and then, yes, of course, David Andrews at center. Fitzy, when they kind of came out with this offensive line, Lyons and I were on the air, we talked about it. I love this combination. I think this is a combination you want to lock in on. I could even be convinced that Caden Wallace may take over at some point at left tackle, because a lot of people seem to believe that even if, you know, the Patriots aren't the most coveted destination right now for free agents, right? So it's not going to be necessarily easy to get top-end left tackle talent or just top-end talent in general to come here. So if you have to build through the draft, I want to start my rookies as soon as possible and get them as much playing time as physically possible, hoping they develop quickly or just hoping they develop at all. And Caden Wallace has been pretty good, so I wouldn't be shocked if he eventually gets some reps at left tackle. But I think right now, as currently constituted, this is probably the best offensive line combination we could ask for heading into the final preseason game.
110%. And I got four other things that I'm going to have both my good eyes on in anticipation of the Six Rings postgame show tomorrow night at 11 on EEI. When we come back, maybe we can actually just finally really dig in on these things.
Great tease by you, Fitzy. Yeah, we'll continue with our things we're going to watch here in the final preseason game between the New England Patriots and the Washington Commanders. Your Boston Red Sox go against the Arizona Diamondbacks again. First pitch for that's at 4:10. John Lyons will get you caught up with pregame at 3:10. This is the Ken and Curtis Show. No Ken, no Curtis. It's Shime and Fitzy filling in on a beautiful Saturday here on WEEI. This is the Ken and Curtis program right here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. No Ken, no Curtis this weekend. Instead, it's Shime and Fitzy filling in on a beautiful, beautiful Saturday morning. It's crisp out there, Fitzy. I got to tell you, last couple mornings I got up, came in, do the midday show with John Lyons, and it was crispy outside. It felt a little bit like fall. It felt like football was really on the horizon.
I get a little bit of a case of the melancholies around this time of year.
Really?
Well, it's temporary.
Fair.
Because I get the back-to-school blues.
Ooh, tough. Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you have kids. That makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I just love spending time with my kids. They're my absolute favorite thing in the world, the best, worst decision I ever made, and I can never get enough time with them. And so there's that part. But then after a couple of days of them being back to school, I get really excited. And then as the weather turns, I love the occasional 85 or 87 degree Friday or Saturday during shoulder season as we transition from summer to fall. But once you get a chance to like steer into one of those like crispy 65 degree days with a slight breeze and maybe you crack your first fest beer or pumpkin, whatever.
For.
And then it's just nice enough for a bonfire and a cookout later. And the kid, you know, I'm coaching flag football this fall. Like all I, when I steer into the autumn, you know, since steer into it is one of my many mottos, I steer hard. I'm just right now kind of going through the transition, grasping and holding on to the last vestiges of summer, but also awaiting the glories of fall in New England.
Yeah. Steer rock hard right into the fall. Like it's just, I September is my favorite month of the year. Without a doubt, because it's still, you're still dealing with the lingering warmth of summer, but it's no humidity. So it's just pure sunshine and warmth with that nice fall breeze and football's on the TV. And like for me, it is the best month of the year, and I don't think it's particularly close. Like yeah, I know a lot of people love Christmas and Thanksgiving, and some people really love the heat of the summer. Dude, September is like the bee's knees.
I think if we did an emergency power ranking of the top 3 months of the year, September has to, it's in the top three. Like
Mount Rushmore of months of the year.
I usually go medal stand.
Okay. So podium.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm at the podium. Like it's gonna see its nation's flag. I'm not sure if it's gonna hear its nation's anthem.
Okay, I get that. That's fair. See, for me, it is the clear and away gold medalist. Like it's not even close. Like it's the Katie Ledecky of months, if you will.
Only on this show. And from you, would somebody say that September is the Katie Ledecky of months?
Yeah, just an absolute holy gold medal swimming
could
winner.
Be the best take of all time. Holy smokes.
That's what we're doing here on the Ken and Curtis program with Fitzy and Shime on a beautiful Saturday morning. But what, Fitzy, right before the break, we were talking about the things we were going to be watching in the final preseason game for your New England Patriots against the Washington Commanders tomorrow night. We've kind of hit on the offensive line being at the top of the list. What's next for you? What is the next thing that you're watching heading into this final preseason game?
Yeah, so number one to me, number one to most people is going to be how much time does Drake May get versus Jacoby Brissett and how does he look? And it should, like, let's almost even remove that from the equation. Like, that's the...
That should be everybody's top of list.
That's the all-time quarterback, if you will, of the five things that you have your good eyes trained on tomorrow night with Pats at Commanders. Number one to me, outside of the May versus Brissett situation, is the reshuffled offensive line. Like, can this offensive line of Okorafor, So, Andrews, Robinson, who I was surprisingly fired up that they draft because I really, really, really want a nasty right guard to go.
LSU product, right?
No, Texas A&M.
Texas A&M, that's what it was.
Yeah, and then, of course, right tackle being Mike Onwenu. I think that's his best spot, and even though he plays a mean, nasty right guard as well, you know, you don't have a great right tackle yet because we're not sure exactly what the Caden Wallace experiment is going to yield, what fruits he'll bear.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to need a little time to develop. So I'm looking at the offensive line, number one. And then number two, right after that as well, I'm looking at the receiver room because you've heard Tyquan Thornton is going to likely be the starting X receiver, that he's going to make the roster. I know you're not happy about it, but look, Hart said take the cheese. Everyone keeps telling us to take the cheese. I didn't love the pick way back when. I got a lot of guff online for not loving the pick. Every year it's like, oh, but he's got such speed and size. This is his year. We haven't had any injury yet. He did put on weight in the offseason. He's had his best camp. I know we're always waiting for that other soft tissue shoe to drop with Tyquan Thornton. So Tyquan Thornton makes it. Kendrick Bourne, he's going to make it, but is he going to start on PUP? Probably. Yeah, I haven't seen much from KJ Osborne. Are they either hiding a weapon or are they disappointed in this guy?
Probably disappointed.
I think Kayshon Booty needs to make the roster. I think there's way more upside potentially with him. He's not the most spectacular guy, but if this season is all about giving guys a chance, like, you know, DeMario Douglas can ball. Jalen Polk looks like the real deal. I would love to buy a spare set of hands for Javon Baker so he can start catching the passes that he needs to, so he can be the stud that I believe that he potentially can be one day. But, like, give some of these other guys a chance. Like, KJ Osborne, he's going to be fine. He's on a one-year, couple million dollar deal.
Yeah, they're going to keep him on the roster because they paid him.
I don't know. Do you think
so? For me, like, they're probably going to keep like six, maybe seven receivers, right? And for me,
Rager too.
Yeah. So it's right now, I would say the guys locked in are Polk, Baker, Pop, Kendrick, and Tyquan. Like, those are the five guys that are absolutely locked in to make the roster. And then I think the last one or two spots is up for grabs between Osborne, Rager, and Booty. And honestly, I think you're probably more apt to keep a guy like Osborne or Rager over Booty just because of what they allow or at least help you with in the special teams game. Like, those guys are can at least be returners. Like, if something's up with Marcus Jones and you don't want to put Pop back there, like, those guys are at least usable in the return game, especially Jalen Rager. So for me, like, it's probably going to be one of those two guys. If you keep seven, then Booty might make the team, but I feel like it's unlikely. And for me, I'm done with Tyquan. Like, to me, it's fetch. It's Mean Girls fetch. You're trying to make fetch happen. I don't care if Tyquan Thornton's father is the inventor of toaster strudel. Doesn't matter to me. He can, if fetch stinks, it's done. It's over with. So does Tyquan Thornton.
Okay. So aside from the all-time quarterback of the quarterback battle tomorrow night and how much time who gets when and the receivers, what would be next up for you in the pecking order of things you're looking at tomorrow night?
Yeah, I want to see if Christian Gonzalez gets matched up against Terry McLaurin. Like, for me, that kind of matters because Christian Gonzalez, it's nice to see him back, but kind of the reports are, and you can kind of lend credence to this if I'm right or wrong, but it seems like he's been kind of average throughout preseason and training camp. Like,
he's been fine.
Yeah, like when he matched up against A.J. Brown after practice, A.J. Brown's like, oh yeah, man, my favorite corner in the class. But he says that after toasting him for like 10 catches in practice. So I'm kind of curious to see, okay, are we going to see more glimpses of that, like, rookie, defensive rookie of the year type, like, you know, really kind of cornerstone piece that he showed last year? Or is he still recovering and he's just kind of okay right now?
See, I think he's recovered. There's something to me about Christian Gonzalez, who is, you know, every interview, he's always smiling. He seems like his heart rate never really changes. There's sort of a game day aspect to him. It's training camp. You want to get back out there, get your reps, get a feel for the action and the intensity that that you get when you're not just doing OTAs and mini camp. I think Christian Gonzalez is going to be fine. I don't think he lost a step all of a sudden entering his sophomore season in the NFL. I don't think the guy is suddenly just forgot how to play ball. Like, I think what happened was on a team and in a whole presentation where there has been such a deficit of star power and magnetism that last year when Gonzalez came in, surprise, you know, remember the way we all reacted when they drafted him? Kid seems like he's got the $1 million smile. He's got the charm. You feel a gravitational pull towards him. That's awesome. So I think there could have been a little bit of an overreaction to his general star power and aura. But I also don't think he plays so ferociously or so intensely that he's someone that thumps his chest and makes SportsCenter every other play. I just think he's going to be solid. And if we have a dependable number one cornerback who, sure, he'll give up a couple. At the same time, he'll get you a couple and probably win more battles than he'll lose. I don't think you should ask. He's not going to be Ty Law. Don't ask him to be a different cornerback than who he is, because the way he plays and the respect that he's already earned in the NFL is merited.
Yeah, I'm not expecting him to be, you know, Darrell Revis or Ty Law or even like prime Steph Gilmore or anything like that. Like, I think, especially in his second year, coming off an injury where he didn't play his full rookie year, you kind of just want him to be like a reliable face-off guy in the NHL. Win like 56 to 58% of your battles, and we'll call that a win. Like, that's a step in the right direction. We're good to go. That means you're solid and you're doing your job.
Correct. And that leads into my last one, and I'll just toss this one out there, and we can debate a little bit more when we come back for the third and final hour. But looking at Christian Gonzalez is a prime spot for you tomorrow night. It would be great to see the starters out there and see Gonzo versus McLaurin and how that works out. But I'm also going to keep my eyes on the top backup cornerback battle. Like, we know John Jones, like,
ooh, okay.
keep him in bubble wrap until the season starts. I don't want your number two corner / still best interior guy.
So you're looking at like the Alex Austins, the Sean Wades, the ZZ
Marcellus Hearns. Dial.
Yep.
That's what I want. Like, Marcellus Dial has, I'm not going to say popped or flashed much in the preseason, but he looks better than a sixth round corner. Alex Austin was a little bit of a find last year as well. Look, these guys, they still may get gassed and torched more often than not because, well, they're young and they didn't come at a premium like Christian Gonzalez did. But given that Marcus Jones plays pretty well, but he's also going to be used as a special teamer and he's a massive asset in the return game, I'm going to want to know if Alex Austin or Marcellus Dial or if the promise of Sean Wade, which may be expiring, if any one of these guys can actually hold their ground. Because while we know the Patriots' defensive line is still a strength of the team, you can't exactly have a back end that doesn't feature a dedicated free safety to this point get blown up or gassed on a regular basis. So I got two good eyes on that one as well.
Perfect. So that's what we're watching heading into the final preseason game here. It's Shyman Fitzy filling in for Ken and Curtis here on WEEI. We'll continue with the Patriots discussion. I want to get more into that, you know, the quarterback of all things we're watching, and that's the quarterback battle. What would the impact be of a good or bad Jacoby Brissett night on Sunday? Same with Drake May. What would the impact of a good Drake May or bad Drake May night be following that game against the Commanders? We'll talk about that all right here on WEEI with Fitzy and Shyman.